Welcome back. Now, it was recently announced that a prequel to the seminal coming-of-age movie Grease is in the works, and it'll tell the story of how Danny and Sandy first got together. Can't wait. Joining me now are TV and radio producer Owen Sweeney and 2FM presenter Afric O'Connell. And we're going to talk about the teen movies and coming-of-age movies that define different generations and different decades. So, Owen, would you give us a bit of background first on what is a coming-of-age movie and when did these become popular?
I suppose, as you say, they're kind of focused on that teen, that cusp of adulthood time of all our lives, which we can all relate to. If you go back to the 1950s, I think James Dean and Rebel Without a Cause.
Which was the invention of the teenager,
really,
wasn't
very
it?
Much so. It's very much an American idea as well, I suppose, translated then across the Atlantic to the UK and to here and everywhere else, I suppose. And in the 1950s, it was that dangerous generation, this new generation that weren't troubled with military service, weren't troubled by war, they weren't troubled by the Great Depression. Their parents just wanted a quiet life, and then they've got all these kids who are too much education, too much time on their hands, and too much introspection, and want to rebel against. And I think that's really, and then you think of Marlon Brando in The Wild One, that great quote, what are you rebelling against? Well, what do you got? And I think that kind of carries all the way through Grease, through the 1980s. You've got the John Hughes movies. Do you know, I mean, you can't talk teen movies without thinking of John Hughes. And
we've come to John
Ferris
Hughes
Bueller and all of that sort of stuff. But I suppose, and the other thing about the 1950s as well, is kind of, if you look at the 1970s and 1973 and American Graffiti, and George Lucas made this movie. And again, you've got the generation that came of age in the 50s and then early 60s, and they're looking back at their own adolescence. And they're a generation that, I suppose, in the early 1970s were bedeviled by the Nixon era, Watergate, the last years of the Vietnam War. It had affected their generation. So the 1950s kids had grown up into a brave new and not so nice world.
But Afric, none of that troubled Grease, really,
not
did
at
it?
All.
None of those big issues.
Not at all, nothing. No. See, as long as you can pour someone into a pair of spandex pants and start them smoking, everything was grand.
But Grease was hugely successful,
enormous.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely enormous. And it was Grease 2 as well. We were only talking about this on 2FM recently. Grease 2, much maligned, but Michelle Pfeiffer's turn as
in the trousers.
Exactly, Michelle's turn in the trousers. But Grease was, as someone who is absolutely not a fan of musicals, it kind of transcended the whole musical genre a little bit, and also kind of got to the heart of high school politics, I suppose, as well, which is something that
a thread that goes through them all.
Yeah,
you're right. Like, old Grease did transcend musicals in a way. People who don't like musicals, they still know every word of Grease, don't they?
It's an album that sold 38 to 40 million copies, depending on who you look up as your source of record sales. But way back when, in 1978, was the year of Grease. It was only outsold in America by Saturday Night Fever, so it was kind of part of that trend as well.
And it's become a standard now. You could see it in any hall around the place.
Absolutely. I have a confession to make. I've never sat all the way through the film of Grease, but I have sat through my mate's younger sister's school production of Grease in Donegal. And also, I worked in a summer camp in America for 2 years. And if you can picture this, you know, the kids, it was residential, so all the kids go back to the separate boys one side, girls the other side of this college dorms, if you like, and a courtyard. And one night after the school disco, or the Friday night disco at 10:30, they're all sent packing. They've half an hour, to get ready for bed. Quite spontaneously, the girls started on one side of the concourse, if you like, the courtyard, singing Summer Loving, and the boys joined
the guys
in.
Knew every response.
Massive duet. Yeah. And these kids were teenagers in the mid-90s, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they knew
every
word.
Yeah, gas. Now, we've asked you to choose some generation-defining movies, and we'll start with the 1980s, because that's as far back as most of us can remember. And this, I actually do get emotional thinking about this one. Now, The Breakfast Club, Owen, was one that really was huge thing for my age group.
Absolutely, mine as well. We'd be similar vintage, and it was the ultimate. I think it's the archetypal teen movie. What's great about it, it's funny actually, Afric mentioned Grease 2. Teen movies, and the very seminal teen movies that we all feel very emotional about, tend not to spawn sequels. The best ones don't. It doesn't matter. Once the film's over, that's
it's a moment in time.
Exactly. Yeah. And the great thing about The Breakfast Club is it's a couple of hours on a Saturday. The most wonderful setup, which is detention. And it throws these five different, and Africa also makes kind of school politics. Mm-hmm. It throws together the jock, the beauty, the brain, the rebel, and kind of the quiet one, you know, the outcast, the Ali Sheedy character. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of then latches on to who they want to be, maybe aspirationally, but also who they probably relate most to who they really are, yeah. You know, seeing themselves reflected on screen.
And they all come to understand each other over the course of this time.
And it changed their lives, yeah. Supposedly. You know, they all kind of reached kind of, you know, a detente in terms of their own little strata.
Alice, you wanted to chip in on The Breakfast Club.
I'm lost. I'm showing my age.
No, we'll move up to the 90s soon, Alice, so you'll be more comfortable.
Dancing through detention. I mean, what better solution do you have to all your problems in life? I mean, it sets the store for every single difficulty a teenager will encounter subsequently.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're locked together, so the adults aren't really there. You know, the teacher comes in every now and then, mm-hmm. You know, the janitor, and you see a few parents at the start and at the end, and that's it.
A new generation seeing it now. I think it's on Netflix, so there's probably a lot more younger people tuning in and catching up on an 80s movie, which is always good to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I always give it a go anytime it's on, I have to say. I get sucked in. And of course, that was John Hughes' Africa, who you were mentioning there, hugely important
to
all of this.
Absolutely. John Hughes was hugely important, particularly in the 80s, for that generation of teenagers who I think were maybe, like Owen said, maybe didn't have so many political things to worry about. There was no military service, that kind of thing. There was no real kind of imminent wartime or anything like that.
So just angst, really.
It was just they had time to focus completely on themselves.
And boy did they,
absolutely. But it was funny because I was kind of looking at the 90s and 2000s in terms of generation-defining films, and it was funny because Cruel Intentions came out in 1999, and it was one of the first. Sarah Michelle Gellar actually said when it came out, she said, we were coming out of a John Hughes era and moving from into these sort of frothy romantic comedies. And she said the film appealed to her because it took material from Dangerous Liaisons or Liaison Dangereuse and gave it to teens. It was the first time anyone gave teens that sort of material that was much darker and kind of a turn away, I suppose, from the John Hughes, maybe happy endings, maybe a little bit of angst as well, but horrible characters and all that kind of thing, you know?
Okay, and I want to stay in the John Hughes era, though, for
a minute, if I might, because
I do think we have to talk about Ferris Bueller's Day Off as well. Owen, did you pick that?
Well, yes, that we wouldn't. I mean, the John Hughes, you have the 16 Candles, you've got Molly Ringwald in Pretty in Pink as well. She's in Breakfast Club. But then Ferris Bueller's Day Off is the lightest of them all. It's probably the one I saw in the cinema, snuck in, you know. It was 15s, I wasn't 15. These aren't the best movies ever made necessarily. I mean, I don't think anyone can
make
that.
They were back then.
Well, you know, but they're the most important. As you say, you still watch The Breakfast Club. People still watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's essentially a caper movie. Mm-hmm. Guy bunks off school. He's kind of charming. His parents are totally indulge him. Jennifer Grey's his sister, by the way, which people often forget. Mm-hmm. And she went on to be in Dirty Dancing. Yeah. Funny, look into that as well. And but Ferris Bueller's Day Off, it's celebrated by still the June the 5th, 1985, apparently, was the day. People do reenact this in Chicago. There's a great theory about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So important is it? The story, if you don't know, is Ferris takes the day off school, springs his girlfriend from school with the help of his best friend. His best friend Cameron's kind of a bit put upon, has issues with his dad, which is a recurring theme in a lot of these movies as well. Steal his dad's car. He basically pretends to be Ferris Bueller's girlfriend's father to get the girlfriend out of school, and then they go rampaging around Chicago. There's a great theory out there that all this happens because Cameron was off sick at the time, that it all happened in his imagination. It's a bit Fight Club-esque, but the whole thing, apparently, there's a brilliant kind of conspiracy theory that the movie
Cameron, as against Ferris, has become a kind of a cult figure in the sense that he's this kid who starts off and like moaning in bed and all these issues, and gradually over the course of the movie
stands up to his father,
learns to stand up to his father.
Yeah, his main adversary, and a lot of these kids have one big issue in the films, and it's a question of whether it gets resolved or not. There's one big event, inevitably prom, in a lot of these American movies that they have to kind of survive. But they do.
But what is probably just as important about the movie, really, is all those kind of scenes and catchphrases that have now become iconic. Let's take a little clip from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Adams?
Here.
Adam Lee?
Here.
Adamowski? Adamson?
Here.
Adler?
Here.
Anderson. Anderson.
Here.
Bueller. 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 Bueller.
I'm slightly embarrassed in front of Alice now because she's thinking, what's that about? Are you people idiots? This is what you think is a great film.
I'm back with the
But Alice, at the time, it seemed funny, I have to say. Now, Afric.
Yes.
Mean Girls, another classic.
It was, Mean Girls is one of those things that it's like, it's the only film on, it's one of the only films online at the moment that is memed constantly. Like every single line in Mean Girls is pretty much a meme. And the thing that it strays away from in stuff like The Breakfast Club and Heathers and 13 and that, is that it's not completely enamoured with high school politics. It's kind of, it starts with Lindsay Lohan's character, Katie, who has been homeschooled in Africa and has somehow been dropped back into life in America, having never sort of high school life in America, having never sort of experienced that. And it kind of speaks to the sense that everyone is awful in school, no matter who you think is the coolest person you've ever seen and how much you wish you were them. It only takes a year or two out of school to realise everyone was awful, including me. So I think that one of those things, Mean Girls has in abundance, one of those things that is a thread through really good teen films and really good coming of age films, is that everyone changes by the end of it. Everyone has a personal, I suppose, reckoning with themselves, you know what I mean? That's good. That's elevating it to a height. But by the end of the film, you know, she has fallen in with these girls who called the Plastics. Rachel McAdams brilliantly plays Regina George in that film and is just absolutely stunning in everything she does and says. And while you're supposed to hate them, by the end of it, it's kind of, you see these different insecurities that people have and different, you know, things that have made them the way they are, including Amy Poehler as Regina George's crazy mom. And in 97 minutes, it fits in more pitch-perfect kind of gags than any of Friends or any of The Simpsons or anything like that.
And the other thing about it is that to us it seemed kind of exotic at the time. Yeah. And little did we know that it was actually predicting what South County Dublin would become like in less than a decade.
Pink
Christina,
polo
what's your seminal coming-of-age movie?
Yeah, I probably haven't a few, like, ones that jump out at me that I absolutely adored was, they're probably more under the radar, but well, there's Clueless, obviously.
Of course,
was just, you know, phenomenal. And I think, you know, is continually played on Netflix over and over. But I absolutely loved 10 Things I Hate About You from the 90s.
Oh, it was such a great film.
With Heath Ledger. I was obsessed with the being the Rocky sort of girl, going into record stores and the rest.
Yeah.
And I really felt that was sort of a, it was different than just the popular girls and, you know, the different sects of teenage girls in school. And it was more about the, I suppose, the darker, broodier side of teenagers.
Yeah.
And then also I loved, it's probably another bit of an obscure one, but Now and Then was an older version with, it had Demi Moore was in it.
That's right.
It was about four girls and they look back into,
it was flashback, wasn't it?
Flashback into their childhoods, and they had major Hollywood stars. But again, a really good one if you can pick it up.
It's funny, Demi Moore now, people won't remember unless they're ancient like us, that Demi Moore was part of this whole exciting thing, the Brat Pack.
Right.
All of that.
Yeah.
Afric, you chose Clueless as well because it is another one of those kind of iconic touchstones. Now,
absolutely. Clueless was one of those films where when it came along, like it was so kind of, the premise of it was so alien. It was based loosely on Jane Austen's Emma. And a lot of these films were, like, actually, like 10 Things I Hate About You was based on The Taming of the Shrew, and that, and so there was a lot of reference to stuff. But Clueless was brilliant because it was just kind of, despite the fact that Alicia Silverstone, Cher in the film, was, you know, the quintessential blonde, outrageously rich, you know,
spoiled
girl in who was the top of the heap in the high school life, you really liked her. She was fundamentally a good person, and she kind of wanted to do good for people around her. She was sort of, if based on Emma, she was the sort of the matchmaker character in that film. Also starred the weirdly ageless Paul Rudd, who I think has just turned 50.
He was in his 20s then.
Exactly. Who has weirdly just turned 50 and looks like he's about 14. And it got to the heart of, it also starred, of course, the late Brittany Murphy as well. So there was an awful lot of, there was great characters who went on, or great actors who went on to do the great things. But the great things about Clueless were the fashion, that wardrobe.
Oh, I wanted
where
it.
I wanted that wardrobe so badly, where the clothes, you know, you put something into a computer, what would look good today, you know, and the wardrobe decides for you. The slang, I think it was the first, I think, as if became a thing.
In fact,
Irish kids as
I'm
well.
I'm wrong
you know?
About Mean Girls. It was Clueless in South County Dublin, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was mid-90s.
Yeah, as if, that just didn't fit.
So let's have a listen now to a bit of Clueless, and remember that this is 20 years ago and they're predicting South County Dublin. Here we go.
I would just like to say that physical education in this school is a disgrace. I mean, standing in line for 40 minutes is hardly aerobically effective. I doubt I've worked off the calories in a stick of carefree gum. Well, you certainly exercised your mouth, Cher. Now hit the ball. Ms. Stoger, that machine is just a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Thanks for the legal advice. Dion, you're up.
Oh, no, Ms. Stoger. I have a note from my tennis instructor, and he would prefer it if I didn't expose myself to any training that might derail his teachings.
Fine. Amber?
Miss Stoger, my plastic surgeon doesn't want me doing any activity where balls fly at my nose.
Well, there goes your social life.
Okay, I don't know how that clip got through. let's go to Alice Leahy for a bit.
Well, the enthusiasm of these two young people here beside me. You see, I don't have children, so I missed out on all of this. But it does show the importance of films like this, because that there is a deeper meaning, you know.
Yeah.
And there is... is questioning people. It is really kind of replacing maybe the writers of the past, and it's how we combine the two.
Yeah.
Because there is a message in all of that.
Was cinema important to you growing up?
We had a small cinema in the town where I grew up. And remember, my father, same, because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to sit in the balcony, but I was told, no, you go where you can afford to go. It's the same film you'll see. But those small cinemas in the town, they've kind of all gone. Mm. And I mean, I know I was delighted when I saw the cinema opening in Rathmines. And would you believe it? Not the Stella now. The Stella was there years before I ever moved to Rathmines. But there's a new cinema down there. It's not new now. And would you believe it? I haven't gone there yet. And I must, because cinema is important.
Well, I'd say this has whet your appetite now to get to cinema.
So if they see me marching in.
To watch Clueless.
Clueless, they say she's really flipped.
And they have started re-showing some of these. You know, a lot of the cinemas have started to show all the 90s and the 80s classics. I, before I got into journalism, worked in the Bray Cineplex back for my sins. So, you know, we used to just constantly watch, I suppose, these coming-of-age films. And they do, as you said, I think, speak to
they're
people
still
and
made,
they still
well, yeah.
And when you watch them again, it just brings back exactly what you felt when you were a teenager, and that's why I think people just continue to revisit them.
Oh, and Corrie, what was your coming of age movie, Mean
Girls?
It's
quite interesting. I do have children. It's quite interesting that my daughter, no longer a teenager, knows every long line and every song from Grease that Owen hasn't sat through. It's the access that the younger generation have to the previous generation coming of age is very interesting because the message is, as we've already said, they're reworks of sometimes classic Shakespearean works.
Yeah.
I think we started with John Hughes, and I can't overstate the influence. I would say Ferris Bueller's Day Off, not being light at all, it's full of philosophy. Mm-hmm. Life moves pretty fast if you don't stop and look at it, it's gone. It's pretty much clear.
I want you to nail your colours to the mast. Pick your ultimate coming-of-age movie for you personally.
Oh, I think Ferris Bueller, and I would probably contend with Wayne's World, but Ferris Bueller would be...
Wayne's World is one of the most important movies that ever made, of course.
You're going quite right there.
Okay.
There's a great line in Wayne's World, actually, where Wayne says, I feel like I'm in a John Hughes Rita Passage movie.
Okay, now I do want to get to another movie, Afric, picked, because we picked a lot of American movies, but Afric, you also chose This Is England.
I love This Is England so much. Mm. And I'm actually obsessed with Line of Duty at the moment as well. And a lot of the actors in Line of Duty have shown up in This Is England. It took place in the East Midlands in 1983. It was made in 2006. And it's about Sean, who's a 12-year-old guy whose dad has passed away in the Falklands War. And he's very alone. And he's taken under the wing of this, what seems to be a kind of group of friendly skinheads. And it's very bittersweet because he finds his tribe, but the tribe, while looking after him in and he comes into his own, also has this very dark side of kind of racist invective and stuff like that, which is
and of course several follow-up TV shows made where they follow them through the years, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Stunning,
stuff. Let's take a little clip from This Is England.
5 minutes, just come and have a sit down, mate.
But
come
you
on.
All just pick on me, everyone does.
Oh, come and sit down, mate. I feel bloody sorry for you. Just come and sit down 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes to make you feel better. Come on, mate, bloody hell. It can't be that bad, eh? So what's this? Who's picking on you, lad?
Some lad at school.
What's his name?
Harvey.
Harvey? Sort of a bloody girl's name is Harvey.
Hello, I'm Harvey. I've come to give you Jip. I've got one of these for you, Sonny Jim. I've got one of those for you. My name is Harvey. You're drawing a fine line. You're drawing a fine line. Hey? Bloody hell.
Okay, that's This Is England. Well worth sussing out and well worth finding the follow-up shows. Owen, we've got about 30 seconds left. Your ultimate coming-of-age movie.
I can do it in one word. Heathers.
Yeah.
It is the movie that Mean Girls wanted to be. It isn't as burdened with, I suppose, the fame that Mean Girls has. I mean, due credit to Mean Girls, but go and watch Heathers first. It's brilliant. Winona Ryder, Christian Slater, the on-screen couple.
Okay.
Of all Gen Xers.
Okay, Owen Sweeney and Africa O'Connell, thank you very much. And thanks, Christina Finn. Thanks, Alice Lee. And thanks, Owen Corrie.